Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Our reading today is from Acts chapter 17, verses 22 through 31. Then Paul stood in front of the Areopagus and said, "Athenians, I see how extremely religious you are in every way. For as I went through the city and looked carefully at the objects of your worship, I found among them an altar with the inscription, 'To an unknown God.' What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you: the God who made the world and everything in it, the one who is Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in shrines made by human hands, nor is God served by human hands, as though God needed anything, since God God's self gives to all mortals life and breath and all things. From one ancestor, God made all nations to inhabit the whole earth, and God allotted the times of their existence and the boundaries of the places where they would live, so that they would search for God and perhaps grope for God, though indeed God is not far from each of us. For in God we live and move and have our being, as even some of your own poets have said, 'For we too are God's offspring.' Since we are all God's offspring, we ought not to think that the deity is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and imagination of mortals. While God has overlooked the times of human ignorance, now God commands all people everywhere to repent, because God has fixed a day on which God will have the world judged in righteousness by a man whom God has appointed. And of this, God has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead."
I've not always understood the meaning and purpose of worship. Truth be told, I haven't always found meaning or purpose in worship. And it might sound strange to hear a pastor stand in front of you and confess that, but my sense is that when we hold those questions ourselves, many of us may have struggled there as well at various points. I've come, though, in my journey to believe that we become participants in God's mission in the world through worship. One theologian says it like this: worship is the place where God's reconciling love for the world is manifest. I haven't always been in that place. Initially, I went to worship because my parents did. I went because they took me along. Wasn't really sure why we were there. And then in adolescence, my parents drifted away from the church, and I started to go more often. I went to big box churches or to parachurch groups, they call them, like Young Life. And I think I went for two different reasons. One, it was one of the very few places in the world, besides my family, where people were trying to process and make meaning of big questions. And so I wanted to be around some of those adults and young people that were living that out. And I was an adolescent, so I also went because there were some cute people that were there, and I thought I might have a chance to get to know them better. We go to worship for a lot of different reasons at different points in our times, in our lives. I stopped going to worship when I was in college. I thought that I could find meaning and purpose out in the world. And for me, what that mostly looked like was committing myself to various people around who are working on causes of justice. So I traveled to Central America with a program in Nicaragua and then in El Salvador, and I went to Northern Ireland. And worship wasn't significant to me because the world was where God was at work. Why did people gather in places like this? There's stuff to do, justice to be made. And so I found myself out there trying to sustain myself as we worked for political change. Thankfully, a mentor of mine introduced Sarah and me to a community in Minneapolis, Minnesota, right out of college called the Community of St. Martin. And it was that small, intimate little community that gathered on Sunday evenings in the basement of a Mennonite church that taught me about the power and the possibility of worship. And we were maybe 50 or 60 people on a big Sunday evening. And thankfully, about 40 of those were professional musicians. I've always been surrounded by really phenomenal musicians like you all. And so people like me could sing along, and it would still sound beautiful because I was outnumbered by everyone in the space. We wove our life together as a people through worship in that little community. It was powerful. I went from there to seminary in New York City, and I stumbled upon a similar place. It was in the South Bronx, and it was a group of young people who were working on environmental justice and police reform. And there, the line between worship and social transformation or reaching in love was almost always blurred. I found myself going in and out of those spaces, relatively unaware of which place I was in. Are we in worship right now? Or are we in some activist meeting? It just kept changing. It kept unfolding. And then I started the ordination process in the United Methodist Church. And I think that's where another big shift in my understanding of worship started to happen. I started to try to learn, like Sarah is now, to be a pastor in the United Methodist Church. And I started to be on this side of preparing worship. And I started to wonder about what is it that we're trying to do. And the team that I was on at that time had a pretty clear image of what worship was. It never set well with me at the time, but I kept going along with it. And it looked something like this, that the people in our community are always so busy out in the world that what we need worship to be is a place of rest and respite. And so the important work happens out in the world, and then when we come into worship, our task is simply to slow down, to help people refill, to give them sustenance. On some levels, it worked for a while for me, but on other levels, it meant worship was always relegated to this other thing that we do, and the real work is out there. So when we started to gather here 3.5 years ago, in worship, and there was like a third this number of people in this space. We were pretty, actually, we weren't clear on a lot of things when we started, but we were clear on this, that worship was becoming central from those very first moments of gathering to who we were. We didn't really always have the language for it, but worship was central to who we were. It was almost like I was returning back to that place in Minneapolis. And in other ways, I was coming to understand worship even differently. This wasn't just a place where souls are simply filled or sustained. No, instead, I've come to believe that we become participants in God's mission through worship. And it may sound like a simple nuance for some of you, but for me, it's been life transforming. So I want to share a little bit more about that. Linda and I have taken an online class. One of the perks of getting to mentor Sarah this year is they let us take a class over at the Graduate Theological Union over in Berkeley. And so we found one that looked really interesting, and it was online. It's called Missional Worship. And we went in trying to make sense of how do we connect rooted in grace and reaching in love. We always have a church in this community over the last 3.5 years. We felt like we get worship is relevant and meaningful, and we long for that. And we know that we have this structure of kitchen tables to help people watch over each other in love. And we're just thankful that you guys reach in love in all these fabulous ways. But we're not really sure how we tie all these things together all the time. So we thought this class might help us along the way. One of the things, it actually didn't go where we expected, but one of the places that I'd like to lift up this morning that's been helpful for us, and I'd like to share it with you all, is a framework by a Lutheran theologian and professor of worship in the Midwest, Thomas Schottauer, I believe. I'm probably butchering his name, so if you ever meet him, just act like I didn't say that. He proposes three different frameworks for thinking about worship, and so I want to invite us to walk through these a little bit. The very first one is called inside and out. From this vantage point, worship and mission are two different things. They're separate. Worship is what we do here on Sunday mornings, and mission is what we do out there in our lives. And so we come into this space to fill ourselves up, to sustain ourselves, so that the work out in the world can be done in more creative and loving and just ways. Mission or worship sends us out. The inside sends us out into the world. I think this is where a lot of the churches that I worked with the last few years were living, mostly unconsciously. It's where I lived for quite a while. Maybe some of us now find ourselves in that place. An alternative to this is outside in. And I think unconsciously this was on our hearts and minds as we started the table here a few years ago. And this is to say that instead of mission being what's done out there in that way, we actually need to shift what's happening in worship so that we don't suck and people will come into the space and it will actually start to reflect God's love and justice in the world. And so we want to learn from what's happening out in the mission, out in the world, about how to talk. Like when we came into this space a few years ago, we had an overhead projector. And I love overheads, but only in like a retro kind of a way, right? And so we had to shift some of the language. We're not even conscious of it now, probably. We say kitchen table and who knows what we're talking about, right? We have to figure out how do we use language that doesn't block people off who are trying to come into this space. Because if what we long for is for people to have their lives transformed by the Spirit and love of Jesus, we're going to need to speak a language that people can understand. I had coffee a few months back with a person in our community who grew up on the edge of church as a very young person and then has been outside of church for a while. And one of the things that he talked about was how fearful he was when we move into communion. He wasn't sure if he was going to do it right, if he was going to stand up at the right moment, if he was going to tear off the bread in the right way. Is it okay for him to take communion? Where are the rules and the regulations about this? We as a people in church who've come to know this as our way of life become so quickly unaware of just how foreign what we do can be for people. And so you see churches around us that have often done a phenomenal job at bringing the mission, looking around out in the world, reading the signs of the times, and bringing that into worship. And often when you do, you see things like pews that are 47 feet long go out of here, and you see chairs. Because it turns out it's kind of uncomfortable to sit in pews. And it's kind of uncomfortable not to know where one person starts and the next stops. We sit in chairs. You see a church that would get air conditioning because it's not very welcoming when people come in and it's hot, or not run out of coffee. These are all things that we would do if we were more focused on this outside-in model of worship and what it means. And I think all three of these different ones that I'm sharing, I think we live in them at different moments. I don't think it's just we're all one or the other of these. The one that I want to close with, this third one, is very powerful to me, and it's where I want to invite us to spend the rest of our time. This theologian identifies it as inside out. On this line of thinking, mission emanates from worship. You didn't cross over a line as you came into the sanctuary in which this is worship and that is mission. Mission is what we do in worship as we express and manifest the reconciling love of God that is luring all of us to a deeper sense of humanity and a fuller expression of who we are as we watch over each other in love. Instead of worship, then, worship becomes this place where God's reconciling love is known, and then we move out into the other missions all around us, noticing how God's resurrection is happening there as well. So inside out, it blurs the line between worship and mission, and mission becomes worship, and worship becomes mission, and our lives start to fold together. So we have a great image of it. It might just look like a piece of paper to you, because it kind of is. This is called the Mobius strip. The Mobius is a piece of paper that Stephanie has helped us with up here. Actually, I want to see. I am not good at following our own blog and doing all the things that Linda puts up on it. Don't tell her this. Is anyone else, who went on to the blog and actually made a Mobius? Did anybody make a Mobius? Look at this. We've got like 10 people made Mobius. Yeah. Brendan, you did not.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
He's our overachiever. Yes, right. I did it. It's okay, because we're going to learn about it right now. But the Mobius is this strip right here, and it's a really unique expression that this person named Mobius created or found. And so I want to invite us to just watch this video as we see how a Mobius is created and what it looks like. So let's watch. I'm not sure if you caught it, so I want to talk us through it. If you start with your finger right here on what looks like it's the outside of this Mobius, and you trace it all the way around without hitting it, and you trace it all the way around, you come right back to the inside of the same space, and you keep going in a circle without stopping, over and over, around and around and around. I just think that's amazing. Did everybody catch that? Like, you start on the outside and you come back around and you're on the inside. So what appears, it's obvious, it's a piece of paper, right? It's three-dimensional, so it has two sides. But it doesn't. It's one-sided object. It's a one-sided object. As you keep moving around it, you're always staying on the one side of that object. You may practice. We're going to have some of these outside. After worship, we're going to have some paper for you to try this, to test it, to see if you think this actually works or if Mobius is wrong. I just want to pause, because you start on this side, you come back around, and you're on the inside. It doesn't have two sides. This has helped me so much to think about the relationship between mission and worship. And I hope it'll help you think about it as well. See, if we understand rooting our lives in grace or worshiping together as this side of the strip, and we just start writing it, well, it turns out when we get to growing in faith, we've already found ourselves to the other side. That's not another side. It's the same side. And then you just keep circling and spiraling. This is the next image that Harrison's going to show. This is how I've always thought about our faith formation process at the table. We root our lives in grace in worship on Sundays, and then we go over here and we grow in faith in a kitchen table. Some of you do so at Old Soul, some of you at Bon Lair, wherever you're meeting for your kitchen table, and then you reach in love. And what that looks like for Dorothy looks different than what it looks like for Elizabeth. But you're reaching in love in your life. And I've thought of them kind of as three different things that we're constantly doing. We're circling around. And worship is a part of that. And mission is really another word for reaching in love. But what if it looks more like this? What if this is one movement that we're making, spiraling into the mission of God? Like, the mission of God is this image. It's symbolic in the Mobius strip. Like, we can't go anywhere where God's mission isn't. It's just everywhere that we are. God's Spirit is leading us in all of those places. And we come and we gather in this place on Sundays and we create worship in ways that we hope will help us get more and more in tune with the reconciling love of God that lures all of creation towards love and beauty and justice. And then we move into the world that is our worshipful mission. And then we come back into this space that is missional worship. And we've actually never left the mission field. This is a very different way than thinking about mission. In the past, the church thought of mission like this. We're going to send, like, for example, we have the Schnack family. They listen online. So the Schnack family is listening from Vietnam. We could have thought about, we are sending them to be missionaries, to teach and their children, to befriend other people. But really, the truth is, we're all missionaries. God is sending and calling all of us in the very places that we are to manifest God's reconciling love for the world. That is why we gather. We gather to get caught in that Mobius, to get caught in God's reconciling love. In 1932, there was an important theologian whose name is Karl Barth. And he argued this, that the church should not understand mission as human activity at all. Instead, for Barth, mission is our participation in God's mission toward the world. This was radical because it was returning to a very ancient way of thinking about mission. Rather than thinking that it's about our human activity and the busier we are, the more justice we must be bringing into the world, it was about noticing God's movement in the world and trying to get caught up and participate in that. We don't initiate mission work. God does. So how is it that we become so fully rooted and grounded in grace and God's love, so centered in our experience of the Christian story, that we can't stop from sharing it, so that we're here in missional worship and our lives become worshipful mission? How is it that that happens? Well, I think Paul has a few things to help us with. And so I want to spend a moment with Acts 17. I think it embodies this Mobius movement of missional worship and worshipful mission. Some people would say that this is the sharpest, most articulate, intellectually tuned witness of Paul in the New Testament. He listens deeply to the people in Athens. So I want to pause there for a moment. These are not Jewish folks. These are not his people. They're not followers of Jesus. These are folks that we're meeting in our workspaces, our neighbors, folks that have no intention of following in the ways of Jesus. He senses there may be some of us in this room. We're not even sure why we're here this morning, but we're wondering about the same questions some of those Athenians were. Paul senses that they have this deep hunger for knowledge and meaning. And so he waits for some openings in their hearts and their stories. And then he witnesses to Christ's resurrection. On my reading of this, Paul is very much affirming of their own creative thoughts. He even uses the poetry of the people around him to say, look how God is being manifest in this place. Your own poetry expresses this. And I don't think we can overstate how bold it is. See, what Paul is also doing, he's bringing worship to them, I think. It's missional worship out on the streets, blurring that line between the two. He's asserting that Christ, the one God that was crucified by the powers that be, and that did not allow that to have the final word, but rose instead in hope and possibility, that one, Paul writes, is the Lord of heaven and earth. That's Paul's way of saying, like, mission is everywhere. There are no boxes or lines where this is mission and that is worship. He says as well, God does not live in shrines made by human hands. In other words, nothing that we can do can take us off of this Mobius. We just live and move and have our being in it. Paul does not water down this message at all. This could have gotten him killed very easily to give that kind of a witness. And I think here we are in the 21st century in Northern California. A lot of us feel like witnessing in any way that was bold could get us killed. It's at least scary, if nothing else, to share for some of our folks here that we came into worship this morning because we're longing for meaning. We're wanting to connect with other people who want to grow in faith. We want to root our lives in grace. It's scary. It's scary to say that for some of us, to folks around us. This is how Paul gets kind of bold and passionate and even over the top. And some of us might want to turn Paul, like close the book actually. While God has overlooked the times of human ignorance, now God commands all people everywhere to repent, because God has fixed the day on which God will have the world judged in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed. And of this, God has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead. And that's where a lot of us want to come in worship and hide, because it's not clear how we're going to take that out into the world. Like, on the surface, it looks like two sides, but when you hold it, it's one-sided. On the surface, this feels like the judgmental Paul, the exclusivist who's not going to allow anybody in unless you do it Paul's way. And there are times when Paul definitely writes that way. It sounds harsh. This helped me. This is from Richard Rohr. He says, "We finally see that I am what I am. I'm good and I'm bad put together. One self. God's mercy is so great and God's love is so total that God uses even my sin, even my brokenness, even the places I fall short in my own favor. God is using all of me to bring me to God. That's the good news." What if that's the kind of assurance we have in the God of our Christian tradition? What if that's the kind of judge that God really is? This judge whose abundant grace is so utterly unpredictable and unending and overwhelming that all of who we are, both sides, get folded together as one. Folded together in God's mission, in that Mobius. I believe this is why we keep trying to root our lives in grace, so that we can live and move and have our being in a God who is grace, who holds us in that, never letting us go. Well, if that's the kind of justice and judge God is, then our challenge as we live out in the world in worshipful mission is to simply notice those who are spiritually hungry around us. That's what Paul was doing. He was noticing the hunger of the people around him. And as we do that, to offer sustenance from the rich store of our spiritual tradition, our challenge will be to find the imagery and the language. Some of it will take words and some of it will take silence. Some will take action, some will take inaction. That we can be honest and respectful and effective at sharing with others how rooting our lives in grace, being so centered in the Christian story as we grow in faith, calls us then to reach in love and to share that. That's what happens as we keep moving around the Mobius, rooting our lives in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love. We become those kind of witnesses that reflect who Paul was and how Paul longed to be in terms of living out in the world as an expression, a manifestation of God's reconciling love. So when someone in your kitchen table shares with you that they're going in for a medical procedure and they're going to be incapacitated for a few weeks, your response, well, what will it be? How will you participate in the reconciling love of God in that particular moment? See, following Jesus is always enfleshed. It's always embodied. It can never just be abstract like a Mobius is in this way, but it takes on flesh. So what's that going to look like? How will our missional worship emanate in your worshipful mission in that moment? Or what about when you hear that a person in our church is homebound? How will you participate in God's reconciling love for that person who feels so easily isolated? Or when you see an expecting mom, or you hear about a person who, or a woman who is already a young mom, and it just feels like she's at the ends, at wit's end. It happens. Amen, Megan? It happens. How will we participate in God's reconciling love for those tired and sometimes seemingly defeated mommies? Well, but what if I reach in love and I do it poorly? Or I try something and it goes wrong? I don't really know exactly what to do. We are going to experience and hear those voices as we witness in those ways, as we try to embody worshipful mission. So I just want to close by acknowledging that when I look back on my journey through what worship has meant to me, if I needed to have it all right to start to worship, I don't think I ever would have started. If I needed to know that the way we're worshiping right now is perfect and we've got it all figured out, I wouldn't keep worshiping. On some level, I have to trust in the grace of God that holds us as we try our best to grow in faith, that sustains us as we think we're on one side of the Mobius reaching in love, but it turns out we're actually giving thanks to a God who sustains and empowers us. And then in this moment, when we think what we're doing is all about God, we come to this space and we actually embody and manifest the love of God right here in this place where God is drawing us closer. If you've tried this Mobius, you know that it's tricky to figure out how you do that half turn. And then it's tricky for people like me to figure out how you tape it. And then the cutting thing that person did, like, that's just way over my head. We are going to have to be gentle with one another, to trust one another, to be daring and brave as Paul was, to stand there and say, I'm going to look at the Mobius, at the mission of God, and try to embody that, to manifest that. And we do that as we continue to hold the mission of God, not as something that happens out there, but as something that surrounds us and keeps us and sustains us. That reconciling love of God that is reaching toward the world as we move around the Mobius of God's love. And this table is one of the ways that we express that love of God for all. As we move to a table and do something that for many of us who have worshiped together for some time, this can feel like simply something that we do in worship. But the truth is that this is an expression and a witness of how God longs to be, a table that is a feast that is open for all, and all means all.